along with basic customs duty, the next part of the duty applicability is the goods and service tax. GST is also applied to all import-export transactions. Goods and service tax is a value-added tax which has been implemented all over India since 2017, you know. This has replaced all other forms of indirect taxes which were levied on goods and services by central government and state governments both. But GST says that exports are all zero rated, and that means no GST applicable on exports. And imports are levied at the same taxes as domestic goods and services, adhering to the destination principle. Destination means destination in India. If you look at the various types of acts available in under GST, it's a combination of four acts. One, State Goods and Service Tax Act. Two, Union Territory Goods and Service Tax Act. Three, Central Goods and Service Tax Act. And four, Integrated Goods and Service Tax Act. As far as our import-export transactions are concerned, the Integrated Goods and Service Tax Act is applicable to all forms of imports and exports, but procedure is on the basis of the Central Goods and Service Tax Act. CGST lays down the procedure. As far as CGST procedures are concerned, the first primary procedure is registration of the importers or exporter or the company or firm. Every supplier shall be liable to be registered under this supplier. Mind you, if you are an importer, then you supply the goods to somebody else, so you are a supplier also. And you have got to register yourself under this act in the state or union territory where your place of work is. Other than special category states, special category states are smaller states like Jammu and Kashmir, Chhattisgarh, etc. They are all small states. So there is a different method. And the state normally is where your taxable supply of goods or services are applicable. If your total or aggregate turnover in one financial year exceeds 20 lakh rupees, that means as long as your turnover in a particular year is less than 20 lakh rupees, you don't have to register under this Central Goods and Service Tax Act. For special category states where they are smaller states, the value is 10 lakh rupees. Credit of input tax charge can be availed by a person, firm or company on any supply of goods or services or both received by him, which are used. Now here, look at the condition following, which are used or intended to be used in the course of his business, and the amount shall be credit to the electronic credit ledger of such person or firm. This basically means that if you are importing something, paying tax on that, CGST on that, and that same thing you are using as a business to again sell it or use it in some other goods where it becomes a business goods for resale at a different place, then you can take credit of this input tax credit. And then again, you would be recovering, when you sell the goods to the ultimate buyer, you would be recovering a higher rate for that ultimate product. Let us say you have imported certain components. You have paid CGST on that imported component 100 rupees. As a manufacturer, you take those goods into your factory, produce another machinery or some other goods and sell it for 1,000 rupees. You get 1,000 rupees as GST, CGST on the goods which you have sold. So you don't have to pay that 1,000 rupees. You will minus this 100 rupees which you have already paid on the raw material, and balance 900 rupees you will pay as CGST at that point of time. So you are claiming a credit of that input tax. Input tax credit is subject to the condition that the receiver is holding a registration certificate, GSTIN, both buyer and seller locally in India has got to be registered under ITC, under CGST, and holding a valid GSTIN registration number. He is in possession of a tax invoice or debit note which has been issued by a registered supplier. Registered supplier can only raise a tax invoice. Non-registered supplier cannot raise a tax invoice. He has received the goods or services or both. It should not be that only documents are prepared for tax purposes. Goods have got to be received by the buyer. And the tax charge has actually been paid to the government. The tax which has been charged by the supplier, that has got to be deposited to the government, and then only you can claim input tax credit. And lastly, he has filed a return as per the requirements. There are 3-4 different kinds of returns which have got to be filed. Here, every registered person shall be entitled to take the credit of eligible input tax on the basis of self-assessed in his return. He has got to file a return and claim a self-assessment scheme in his return. And such amount shall be credited on a provisional basis to his electronic credit ledger. It will not be paid in cash to him, but put in his electronic credit ledger to be used for further payment of tax. The credit shall be utilized only for payment of self-assessed output as per the tax return which you have filed. And the details of every inward supply furnished by a registered person, that means registered person, when he has supplied the goods, you, that details have got to be matched with the corresponding details of the outward supply that you are making. And when these details match with each other, inward supply return, outward supply return has got to be matched. And then only input tax credit is granted. What is a tax invoice? It includes credit and debit notes. A registered person, mind you, non-registered persons, you cannot give a tax invoice at all, because you are not entitled to collect any GST. Neither you are entitled to pay any GST. A registered person supplying taxable goods shall, before or at the time of removal of goods for supply to the recipient, where the supply invoice involves movement of goods or delivery of goods, or making it available to the recipient in any other case, will issue a tax invoice showing description, quantity and value of the goods and the tax charged thereon. So your invoice has got to be a tax invoice properly made out and numbered, showing these particulars on them. A registered person supplying taxable services also, not only goods, now services also, shall, before the provisions of service, but within a prescribed period, issue a tax invoice showing the same description, value, tax charged thereon separately in the particular invoice. As far as returns are concerned, there are different types of returns which have got to be compulsorily filed by registered persons only. Registered persons shall furnish electronically the details of outward suppliers of goods or services or both affected during a tax period on or before the 10th day of the month succeeding the said tax period. That means if you are taking a quarterly return basis, March, April to June, 10th of July, you have got to file the return. And the types of returns are: one, GSTR1 return, GSTR2 return, GSTR3 return, and then compounding taxpayers, foreign and non-resident payers, ISD return, TDS return, and annual return. These are all different forms of return. But technically, under normal cases, importers and exporters will have to file only these three different kinds of returns: GSTR 1 and 2 and annual return. And three if they want to claim any input tax credit. As far as applicability of all imports and exports are concerned, you have got to follow the Integrated Goods and Service Tax Act of 2017. IGST is levied and collected by the central government only, not state governments. And this covers supply of goods and services imported into the territory of India till they cross the customs frontiers of India, shall be treated to be supply of goods in the course of interstate trade or commerce. It is termed as interstate trade or commerce, and the place of supply of goods or service shall be imported into India shall be the location of the importer, exported from India shall be the location outside India. Therefore, all imports and exports are treated as interstate trade or commerce as per the provisions of the ITGS. What is the procedure for import? Now look, let's look at separate procedure for import, separate procedure for exports. As far as imports are concerned, types of duties are: one, basic custom duty, add education cess on basic custom duty, and then the integrated tax based on CGST. Method of calculation: applicable duties for home consumption is to be calculated on the assessable value as follows: basic customs duty plus education cess plus the value of the goods will form the assessable value for the integrated CGST. So first you apply basic customs duty plus education cess, then integrate tax as per CGST, which is calculated on the assessable value of basic customs duty and education cess. Next, in case of imported goods, if they are taken into the factory of production, input tax credit can be availed on the basis of duty paid bills of entry. Whatever tax amount has been mentioned on the duty paid bill of entry, full quantum, you can claim input tax credit because it is going for the production of an ultimate product which you will sell in the market after paying GST. What's the procedure for export now? Any person making zero rated supply, that is any exporter, he shall be eligible to claim a refund. Either of the following options, there are two options available. He may supply goods or services or both under LUT or letter of undertaking without payment of integrated tax and claim refund of unutilized input tax credit. First of all, when he is buying the goods, he will give an LUT bond to the manufacturer and not pay any CGST on that. So that will be tax-free, CGST-free. Manufacturer will claim input tax credit on the unutilized tax separately. Then he may also supply goods or services or both on payment of integrated tax, pay integrated tax, and then claim refund of such goods in accordance with provisions of refund of the CGST on all the rules, as per CGST refund rules. Exporter has got two options. One, purchases from manufacturer. He give a register, a letter of undertaking with the jurisdictional CGST. Transfer a part as per export purchase value to manufacturer. That means part of LUT he will transfer to the manufacturer. Remove goods from factory without payment of tax upon receipt of payment of required fees. He has got to pay fees of 2% of the value of the goods, which is known as administrative tax. Goods have got to be transported directly to the docks or ICD under a nil tax invoice. Tax invoice will show nil, mentioning the LUT details. After completion of export, submit proof of export to the jurisdictional CGST from where he has obtained the LUT, and then redeem the LUT. So this is a bond procedure involved. Option two, he can purchase the goods from a supplier other than a manufacturer. Now that supplier has already paid GST on the goods. So purchase the goods from supplier after payment of tax and obtain a tax invoice showing the tax actually paid. He has got to mention details of this tax invoice in the export invoice and then ensure that the custom broker enters the purchase tax invoice details on the shipping bill with the GSTIN number of the supplier and the exporter. Both the GSTIN numbers have got to be mentioned on the shipping bill. Quantum of tax paid has also got to be mentioned with the invoice, tax invoice numbers and details of the manufacturer on the export invoice. And then custom broker should ensure that the shipping details are properly mentioned in the export general manifest after the conveyance has left the country. EGM has got to show that these goods which are declared in the shipping bill have actually been exported, declared in the export general manifest. And subsequent to that, the tax credit will be sent by the customs department directly to your bank, that is the exporter's bank account, which has been registered with the drawback department. For all purpose of drawback, you are declaring your bank details, account details to the customs department. Just like you get a duty drawback back through your account, you will get the GST also, which has been paid on the tax invoice. You will get it as a part of the drawback in your account directly, subject to condition that these steps are followed. As far as input tax credit is concerned, there are certain conditions for claiming input tax credit by importer. The input tax credit shall be availed by a registered person on the basis of any of the following documents: an invoice issued by supplier of goods or services or both, and a debit note issued by a supplier. That means either on the basis of debit note or on the basis of invoice, or a bill of entry or similar document prescribed under the Customs Act 1962 or rules made for assessment of integrated tax or imports. Now, when you pay duty actually to the Customs Department, there's always a human error involved, and sometimes you may make a mistake, a genuine mistake, or sometimes somebody deliberate mistakes also they make and pay less duty. So in terms of all these short payments of duties, there is a procedure involved in the customs department. First, on the basis of pre-notice consultation regulation of 2018. And by this regulation, this is a means of communication by the customs department of the grounds of short payment of duty along with the applicable interest payable or on erroneously refunded also. If you have paid duty short, maybe due to wrong exchange rate or maybe applicability of a wrong exemption notification, the department will send you a pre-notice consultation communication. An ordinary letter will be sent to you. This commission is issued prior to notice to the importer or exporter. First stage, in the past, notice was being given directly. Now, no, they will write a letter to get a response from you. Importer-exporter may pay the duty if they feel that there is a genuine mistake, yes. So, duty along with the applicable interest is paid before service of a notice. That means based on the communication received from Customs Department, the importer pays the duty, or even before a communication comes to him, he can determine the mistake himself and pay the duty of short payment with interest on his own ascertainment. Once he has paid, he will inform the customs officer. In both these cases, the customs officer may then decide not to proceed with any notice, and he shall intimate the same to the person concerned. Once you have voluntarily adhered or based on the communication, you have made that payment where there was a wrong calculation or so, then no further action will be taken by the Customs Department. Audit-based control as being given under the WCO has made the Customs Department to amend the Customs Act and include a separate section, Section 99A, as an audit section in the Customs Act 1962. And here, the Customs Audit Scheme has prescribed two types of the audit. One, transaction-based audit. That was the old concurrent audit. It has been replaced by a post-clearance audit system. Here, after the clearance is completed, within 6 months, RMS will send certain required number of documents to the audit officer, who will check, audit it, and find if everything is okay. Otherwise, they will issue a communication notice or a notice for tax compliance. Second is a premises-based audit. This is known as an on-site post-clearance audit at the premises of the importers and exporters. And here, the provisions of Section 99A read with the provisions of the Customs Audit Regulations of 2018 shall be followed in total. Now, let us look at some of the provisions of the Customs Audit Regulations of 2018. The most important is the definition of audit and auditee. These are very crucial. Let's understand both these together. What is the meaning of audit? What is the definition of audit? It includes examination or verification of declarations, records, any entry or document, or import or export license or authorization, or all government-related scripts, certificates, permissions, etc., including the books of account, of the importer exporter or allied people. Test or analysis report and any other document relating to the imported goods or export goods or any dutiable goods. And this can include inspection of sample and the goods, if such sample or goods are available, and where necessary, drawal of sample can be done. This is the definition of audit. That means scope of an audit includes all these points. Who is an auditee? That means who are all the persons or entities who can be audited under this customs audit regulations of 2018. It means a person who is subject to an audit under Section 99A of the Act and includes an importer or exporter or custodian approved under Section 45. That means custodian of a CFS or ICD where the imported goods are lying, or licensee of a warehouse. Custom bonded warehouses are licensed, and goods which are kept in a custom bonded warehouse, even they can be audited. Or any other person concerned directly or indirectly in clearing, forwarding, stocking, carrying, selling or purchasing of imported goods or export goods or dutiable goods. This is the definition of an auditee. That means the Customs Audit Department can audit all or any of these entities if they require to do so. What is the manner of conducting an audit? Of course, I have not taken the entire regulation into consideration, but only the relevant portions which are actually practically enforced. The proper officer may conduct either in his office or in certain cases at the premises of an auditee. He may request the auditee to furnish documents, information or record, including electronic records, as may be relevant to the audit. Mind you, to the audit of only the import or export consignments and not to the audit of the income tax department or his entire turnover of his other type of business. They cannot transgress into that field at all. It has got to be strictly related to import-export consignments. And before he comes to the office for auditing the group of officers, the senior officer in charge of the audit, he may give not less than 15 days advance notice to the auditee to conduct audit at his premises, that he would be coming within such and such period. And when he arrives, his group, his team arrives, he may inspect the imported goods or export goods or dutiable goods at the premises of the auditee, or request the auditee to produce sample if available with them. If not available, then no, he can't force it. He shall inform the auditee of the objections, if any, before preparing the audit report, to provide him an opportunity to offer a clarification with supporting documents. If he finds any mistake over there, audit mistake, audit problem, he can always ask the auditee to give him additional information or supporting document. And if the importer-exporter gives him the required document, then the matter can be closed then and there. Where the auditee is in agreement with the audit findings, he has got to, the custom officers or group of officers have got to give the findings of the audit report in writing to the auditee. And where the auditee is in agreement with the audit findings, he may voluntarily make payment of duties, interest, or other sums due, if any, in part or full, to the proper officer. And the same will be recorded in the audit report. In case there is any minor default, it will be complied with and recorded in the audit report. Where the proper officer has asked the auditee to furnish information, document, record, or sample for the purpose of audit, it shall be mandatory for the proper officer to inform the outcome of such audit to the auditee. Whatever the findings are, the audit officer has got to inform the auditee, and the proper officer shall complete audit in case where it is conducted at the premises of the auditee within 30 days from the date of starting of the audit. It cannot be go on for a long period of time. No, 30 days. But provided that there's something further required to be done, it has got to be done with a written object from the jurisdictional commissioner of custom. That means jurisdictional commissioner has got to authorize for a period beyond this 30 days. It can be extended from 30 days to 60 days. And that order has got to be issued by the commissioner in writing. And then only the audit officers can conduct for that further 30 days. For the purpose of proper auditing, separate audit commissioners have been notified. CBIC has notified audit commissioners in Chennai, Delhi, Mumbai Zone 1 and Nhava Sheva Zone 2 with all India jurisdictions, which I have explained to you before. These commissioners have become functional under the administrative control of Chief Commissioner of Customs, Chennai, Delhi, Mumbai Zone 1, 2, etc. Audit commissioners are headed by an officer of the rank of Principal Commissioner or Commissioner of Customs. All other junior officers would be under these commissioners. And board has also appointed officers in customs audit commissionaries of specified ranks as additional officers of customs for the purpose of carrying out the audit. These are all related to an audit commissionerate only, and they would only be conducting the audit. Well, friends, thank you. Yes, I know this needs a deeper study. You have to study a little bit more on this. Thank you.